Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
You can't do that. What are you thinking? You are not good enough. You are not going to get that job. You don't have an education. What? That is for smart people, not you. That outfit doesn't look good on you. You look ridiculous.
Blog Talk Radio.
You can't do that. What are you thinking? You are not good enough. You are not going to get that job. You don't have an education. What? That is for smart people, not you. That outfit doesn't look good on you. You look ridiculous. You want to go where? With what? Money you don't have? Remember, you're broke and worthless. Nobody loves you. This is the voice of the toxic ego, the voice that is holding you back from your divine life. Dr. Nydia is here to guide you in learning to let go of this voice. She is here to teach you inner work, a journey through the soul, to empower you in creating a passageway to spiritual development. Dr. Nydia received her PhD from Union Institute and University in Psychology with emphasis in addiction studies. She is a registered clinical social worker intern and received her master's degree from Barry University. She is a certified addiction professional for the state of Florida. She is also a Reiki master, healing touch practitioner, and a master hypnotherapist. For more information, visit her website at www.dranidia.com. Dr. Nydia. Now, please welcome your host of Inner Work, Dr. Nydia.
Well, hello, here we are again. You're listening to Dr. Nydia, Inner Work, with your host, Dr. Nydia. And today I'm all alone. I just came back from Washington, D.C. Well, a beautiful journey. My son came back from Afghanistan, and I went last Sunday. I went to Washington to meet with him, spend the whole week with him. On Friday, we decided to go to New York to visit family, and we went to New York, and then we went to Passaic, New Jersey, where I used to live like 20 years ago, and we saw some friends over there, and then we went back to Staten Island, where my family lives, and then and all this is driving. I'm a 70-year-old woman, and his father is 72, and we old folks were sitting in the back, you know, like dozing all the time they were driving. But it was beautiful. It was wonderful to spend some time with my son, knowing that he's safe and that he's going to go on with his life, at least for today. And in this journey that I did these last few days, I was thinking and I was talking with my son and my daughter who went with me and my son's father, and we were talking about our mission. What is our mission? And we've all heard about it. What is your mission? What are you here on this planet for? Why are you here? And I believe that we're sent here for a reason, that we all have meaning in the world. I really believe that we're all blessed with a unique gift. In Spanish, we call it the el don, D-O-N. And el don means that it's something that's very unique and very precious to you, to the individual. And I call it a gift. And this gift, I believe, comes from a higher power. I remember when I was out there drinking and I came to a realization that my life was empty. I had I was a drunk. I was a knocked down, drag out drunk. And my life consisted of just getting up whenever I got up, drinking, passing out, drinking, and going out and trying to find my drink if I didn't have it. And if I had it, it was just drinking or thinking about getting it and drinking. My whole life was surrounded by this horrible addiction. And I used to think, why am I here? Am I here just to suffer like this day after day, not doing anything year after year, watching my life just go down the drain? What's the purpose? And I don't know. I don't know exactly. I can't tell you exactly what happened, where it happened. Well, maybe I do. I remember that the last time I drank, I was living in New York, and I got on the train station. I had taken all of my identification out of my pocket, and I was going to kill myself. And I remember I deliberately took everything, all of my personal papers and whatnot, my identification, money, everything. I just took enough money to get on the train, and maybe a couple of dollars, buy a token, and that's it, and because I was going to jump in front of the train. But I was already drunk, and I had a bottle with me, and I somehow managed to call my psychiatrist at the time. And from what he tells me, I really don't remember. I was in a big, beautiful blackout. And my doctor said that I had told him that I was going to jump in front of the train and I was going to kill myself. I couldn't take it anymore. And he said to me, okay, I could do that. But before I did that, he wanted me to go to the office, his office. Now, if anybody knows anything about New York, I was in the Bronx, and his office was in way, way, way out in Brooklyn somewhere. So it was like maybe, I don't know, maybe a half hour, 45-minute ride by car. So by train, it was much longer. And he convinced me to go to his office. When I got there, he put me in a back room. He let me keep my bottle, and he had me hospitalized. That was my last drunk. And I remember when I was in the hospital, I hated everything. I hated everybody. But I was thinking, what is this? What am I in this world for? I've been beaten up. Since I was a child, I was beaten up. I was mistreated. I was tortured. I was burnt. And then I got married, and I married someone just like my father. He beat me up every day. He would kick me and burn me and do pretty much the same thing my father did. And I'm looking at this, and then I had four kids, and three of them were deathly ill. And my little one, my last one, the one that just came from Afghanistan, he had some kind of obstruction in his intestines, and he got very, very violently ill to the point where he was baptized in the hospital and he was given the last rites. That's how sick he was. It turned out that he had some kind of obstruction and he had internal bleeding. So I'm thinking back of all the misery in my life, and I'm saying, what the hell am I here for? Just for all of this? And this just kept going on and on in my mind. And at some point, when I came out of the hospital, and by the grace of God, I didn't drink. And by the way, I didn't believe in God in those days. But I didn't drink. I almost did a couple of times, but I didn't do it. I didn't actually go, pick it up and drink it. And I always had this wondering, why am I here? I mean, my first year was horrible. But at some point, I don't know if somebody said something or if I read it or where the information came from, but I discovered that I had a gift. like, duh, what the hell kind of gift could I possibly have? I'm the most miserable human being on earth. I have no reason to live. But that stayed with me. And I kept hearing it here and there and people saying that I had a mission or they had a mission, they had discovered their mission. And I couldn't figure it out. I had no clue what could possibly be my mission. And one day when I had a sponsor that had me sit down and he told me to write down, let me see, I think I have that written down somewhere. He told me to reevaluate my purpose, actually to evaluate my life purpose. And the questions were always nagging me. What do I want? Why do I want it? What is my purpose? Why was I put here? And it was like I just couldn't find anything of value that had to do with me. And, of course, then I went into the steps, and I started to work the steps, and I started to realize that I wasn't as bad as I thought I was. I thought I was a horrible, miserable human being because I had done some pretty terrible things, according to me. The thing is that the horrible things that I said that I did were actually things that other people said that were horrible. You know, like stealing and lying and cheating and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. But the thing is that I did those things because I didn't know any better. And that's one of the things that I teach. We are where we are in our life. We're not where we want to be. We're not where we think we should be. We are where we are. And the thing is that when we're in a place that we don't know any better, when we were born, we had no clue about anything. All we wanted to do was eat, poop, and sleep. And when we didn't get what we wanted, we'd scream and somebody would put a bottle in our mouth or change our diapers or whatever. And when you're a year old and when you're 10 years old and wherever you are, whatever stage you are in your life, I mean, you can't tell a two-year-old child, go drive that Mack truck. You can't even tell a two-year-old child to go drive a car or even a two-wheeler because it's just not realistic. They're not mature enough. They don't have the ability either physically, mentally, or emotionally to do what some of us think that they should be doing. And that was what was going on with my father. My father wanted me to be an adult at the age of 2, at the age of 10, at the age of 15. He wanted me to be already knowing everything that he knew and believe everything that he believed. Well, my father was a big womanizer. My mother was a gambler. So I had two really great examples of what not to do in life. However, this is where they were. And I had to understand this is where they were. And when I was out there drinking, I didn't know it, but that's where I was. And there were things that I just didn't understand. I didn't have the ability to understand. I couldn't have done things any different than what I did. It's like saying in a hurricane, the wind blows the branches off the trees, the roof off of a house. And we don't get upset at the hurricane. That's an act of nature. It doesn't know any better. It doesn't know that people live in these houses. It doesn't know that it's going to slam a Volkswagen into a bunch of people. It doesn't know. It does what it does because that's what it does. And we as people are exactly the same. we do what we do because that's the ability that we have. We don't have the ability to be anything but what we are at any given moment. And we do what we do because we don't know any better. And so what happens with all of this is that when I was feeling guilty because I was stealing and lying and cheating and doing all those things, I didn't realize that, hey, that's what people at my level of maturity do. I couldn't have done it any different. You see a dog. You see a wolf. You see a bear. And I've read stories where a bear will grab onto a man or a woman or a human being or a child, whatever it is, and it'll just tear it apart. It doesn't know that it's destroying a life. It just knows that this is what I do, so this is what I'm going to do. And a rabid dog, it's going to bite you, it's going to tear you apart, and it's going to give you a rabies. Because it doesn't know any better, because that's where they are in life. And so what happens is that feeling guilty because this is who I am, then it's just totally, totally a complete waste of time. Because I couldn't do anything other than what I did. The way I did it, with the people that I did it. And so it's interesting that we live with a lot of guilt sometimes. And we don't realize that it doesn't make any sense to have all that guilt. Because we don't know any better. We begin to grow as we experience life. And a lot of times we don't want to make mistakes. So we don't make mistakes, or at least we pretend not to make mistakes, which is pretty silly because the fact is that we're not going to learn unless we make mistakes. So what would be the purpose of not making a mistake? Other than that the toxic ego is not going to allow us to grow. I'm good the way I am, and I don't need to learn anything. And this is our toxic ego talking. And you can't do this, and you can't do that, and we live in a box. One of the things that I do, and before you can even begin to find your mission, you need to understand that you need to begin to look outside the box. You need to start climbing out of that box, those rigid rules that we have, the idea that it has to be a certain way because otherwise what? What can happen? So we grow. That's the only thing, the worst thing that could happen is that we grow. Duh. But we don't allow ourselves to make a mistake. And that's why the other day I was talking about rationalization. When we make a mistake, we don't admit that we make it. We make an excuse as to why that happened. And, of course, we don't say, well, yeah, I messed up. I screwed up. Yeah, I'm sorry. I did it. Next. No. We start saying, well, I was late for work because traffic was bad. There was an accident on the road. And probably there wasn't any accident. Or maybe there was an accident, but we left late. And we're stuck in traffic because we're running late as it is. Had we left earlier, we probably wouldn't be stuck in traffic. And it's not to say that things don't happen. Yeah, things happen. But not every time. And when we develop a pattern of doing things and blaming others and telling other people what they should be doing and judging. I was speaking to somebody, my ex-husband. I was speaking to him, and I said to him that when when we have an opinion, we're judging, which means that if I like or I don't like, and especially it's harmful when it's something that I don't like, it means that if I like it, it means, okay, I'm approving of what of the decision that you made, as if I had a right to say, yeah, okay, that's a good decision, keep doing it. Or, no, that you made a really bad decision. And he keeps telling me, my son smokes. My daughter smokes. Not the one from Afghanistan. The one from Afghanistan, he's got other issues. But he's telling me, well, he shouldn't be doing this, and he shouldn't be doing that, and he shouldn't. And I'm telling him, you don't have the right to have an opinion. He's an adult. They're all adults. They need to make their own decisions. They need to make their own mistakes. And he was preaching to them, and I'm over there going, oh, my God, you know, I just wanted to disappear. And I went into my room in the hotel. I just went into my room, turned on my TV, and just, you know, vegged out until he finished with them. And then they wound up getting in arguments, and it was, I mean, it was really horrible because everything was a judgment. And the reason he says that he's telling them this is because he's already gone through all those experiences, and he wants to save them the trouble. And I keep telling him, you know, we can't tell them what to do. They have to go through their own experience. We went through our own experience. When people told me to stop drinking, I'd tell them to go to hell. I didn't pay attention. So trying to tell the kids something now that they're doing wrong or they shouldn't be doing or whatever, it's a waste of time. It really doesn't make any sense because it's a complete waste of time. And so what I want to do is understand. So when I was drinking and I stopped drinking and I came into a recovery program, and I had to understand that, hey, I got to make mistakes. And I didn't learn this right away. It took me a while. I have to make mistakes, duh, in order to grow. And so what I did was ask myself these questions. What do I want? What do I really, really, really want? And why do I want it? What is my purpose? Because they told me I had a mission, and I'm going like, what is my mission? What could possibly be my mission? And so I began to evaluate. I began to look at myself, and I began to understand certain things that were a pattern for me. And one of the things that I did was I love to talk. I love to talk. You can't stop me from talking. As you very well know, I can talk for an hour and still have more stuff to say. And I started to look at that as a virtue. So the first thing I had to do was start to look at my worth. What are my values? What am I worth? And I started to understand. Once I did, I started to look at, I looked at all my heart. I did an inventory, and I looked at all of my horrible, horrible things that I did. And then I heard other people talking in the program, and I said, damn, but I wasn't that bad. And I started to understand that what I believed was bad that I did was because that's what I was told. That's what I was taught. From very, very young, I was told that I was no good. I was told that I was stupid. I was told that love is getting a beating because my father would say, I'm doing this because I love you. And I thought that love was getting slapped around, getting the more you hurt me, the more you love me. And so I didn't want to be loved. I didn't want people to love me. And for a long, long time, when somebody said they loved me, it was emotionally excruciating because I knew that somewhere along the line, these people were going to hurt me. This is the same way my father did, the same way my ex-husband did, my first husband. And so as I began to mature and I started looking at things from within, I started realizing that, hey, all the talking that I do that people have told me over and over again to shut up and stop talking and you don't know anything, I realized, hey, that's a virtue. I may be a pain in the ass right now because I have no clue what I'm talking about. But if I go back to school and if I get an education, if I find my niche, then I could use that because I talk. I love to talk. I don't know if it makes any sense, but that's what I love to do. And so I put that aside. And somebody, one of my sponsors once gave me this inventory, and he said, write down. Let me see if I can. First, I had to look at my goals, and I had to look at my values. And he told me, look at what you're worth. And I realized, hey, I can drive. That's worth something. I've raised my kids, not the best mother in the world, but I haven't killed them. They're still alive. I've fed them. I've messed them up probably emotionally worse than they would have had I been healthy, but the fact is I didn't know any better. And I was doing what I did because that's what I knew how to do. I didn't know how to do anything else. So I had to begin to see what matters most. Is my connection with myself being present and feeling blissful. That's what I wanted. That was my goal. And I started to look at what I valued. And what I valued was meaningfulness in relationships. I never had a real relationship. And then I met this man, and he was a really, really nice man. And we lived together for almost 20 years. Then we grew apart, but for the time that we lived together, and he's still a very nice man, we're friends, and we value each other's presence. We value the gift that we can give to each other. The gift is my son, and he adopted my son when my son was 4 years old, when I came into recovery. And so I had to become financially independent and have power over my time, my location. I had to plan to work only on the projects and causes that I connected with. My goal was to acquire financial independence, and that doesn't mean that I'm rich or anything like that. But I pay my bills, and I work, and I make enough to pay my bills and get some of the things that I want. And so I had to find out what was valuable to me, and I have a son He was diagnosed with minimal brain dysfunction, which is considered alcohol fetal syndrome, if I'm not mistaken. And so I had to learn to take care of him and understand him. And he is pretty much independent, but there are some things that he can't take care of for himself. So I do for him what he can't do for himself. Everything else he has to do for himself. And I allow him to make his mistakes, and I allow him to go to it and have his temper tantrums, and I allow him to do whatever he feels comfortable doing. And I don't tell him, no, don't do this. He smokes. I don't like that he smokes, but he smokes. That's his choice. I don't tell him, don't smoke. I don't judge him because he smokes. I pray that he stays healthy as he can under the circumstances. Now, I also... One of my goals was to live every day fully as if it were my last. And so I had to ask myself certain questions. And these are some of the questions that my My sponsor told me. He said to me, take out a piece of paper and find a place where you won't be interrupted. Turn off your cell phone. Write the answers to each question down that he gave me. And write the first thing that pops into your head. He said, write without editing. Use number them or bullet them each point. And he said, don't write more than a sentence. Just write, what is it that you want? What is it that you really, really want, that you're really passionate about? And he said, it's important to write the answers rather than just thinking about them. Write them down with paper and pencil. Don't type them up on the computer. Let your subconscious mind go from the brain to the thought to your hand and onto the paper. Don't type it. Don't put it on Microsoft Word. You can do that later. And it's important, very, very important, to write them down. Don't just think about it. Write quickly. Give yourself less than 60 seconds for each question. If you can, give yourself 30 seconds. Be honest. Nobody will read whatever it is that you're writing down. It's important to write without editing. Don't think about it. Just write it. Think of what you would really, really love to do. And in my list, I put down, I want to be a pilot. I want to be a singer. I can't sing for crap, but I want to be a singer. I want to be an actress. I want to be a comedian. I want to be this and I want to be that. And I just made a whole bunch of things. Some realistic, some not realistic. Enjoy the moment. Just think of something and say, yeah, that really is exciting. I want to do that. I want to run away and go to the circus. Okay, write it down in 60 seconds or less. And then once you have your list, okay, make sure that with your list you have what makes you smile, what really gets you excited, what makes you laugh. I watch a lot of Comedy Central because I want to laugh, and sometimes they're just idiotic and I change the channel, but for the most part I watch them, and I watch them over and over and over again. I go to YouTube just to see the silly things that are on there so that I can laugh. I look at baby pictures and animal pictures and on YouTube and birds as they're in a wheel and they fly off the wheel and they land somewhere else and they pick themselves up and they get back on the wheel again. And it's like, oh, my God. And when they're the hamsters, especially, when they're running and running and running and suddenly they're running so fast that they can't stay on the wheel and they just pop right out. And it's funny. And then they just pick themselves right back up again and go right back on the wheel again. And they don't hurt themselves. So find out what makes you laugh. Who are your favorite comedians? I used to love Soupy Sales, for those of you who know who Soupy Sales is. Okay, he was the one that used to throw the pie in people's face. And so make sure that you discover what makes you smile. What are your favorite things to do in the past and now? Because you're not going back there to relive any experience. You're going back there to find the pearls, to find the gifts. What is it about the past that made you laugh? And you may not find anything. You may be where I was when I first started doing this, where I said nothing made me laugh. Everything made me cry. But I did it again and again and again until I started to find things that made me laugh. And they told me, listen to the comedy shows, laugh, listen, look around at people, and don't judge, just laugh and see how silly they can be and how entertaining they can be. Watch a baby. I had to sit. My sponsor told me my baby was very small, the one that just came from Afghanistan. And I used to watch him as he tried to do things. He was little and uncoordinated, and he wouldn't give up. He would struggle and pant and he was just funny because he would actually fall down when he was starting to walk, when he was trying to climb something, when he was trying to reach for something, and he couldn't do it, and he just kept doing it until he finally did whatever it was that he wanted to do. And in the meantime, I was rolling on the floor from laughter because kids are funny. Art Linkletter used to say, kids say the darndest things, or something like that. And it's true. And they do the darndest things, and they get themselves trapped. I remember when he would get caught up in a blanket, and then he couldn't get himself out, and he'd panic. And it would be hilarious because it would be just, I would just pull on the blanket, and there he was. And he'd go right back in and wrap himself up again in the blanket. So this is how they learn. This is how we learn. He didn't see himself making a mistake by wrapping himself up in a blanket and then getting so tangled up that he couldn't get out. He learned a lesson. He learned how not to tangle himself up in the blanket. It happened one or two times and that was it. Didn't happen again. And so that's how we learn. Make the mistake. No matter how big the mistake is, make it. Regret it later and say, oh boy, I really messed that one up. And that's it. You know you're not going to do that again. Or you may do it again. And you make the lesson that you learn is that, yeah, you can continue to do that. Just tweak it. See? Find a different way of doing it so that you don't keep making the same mistakes over and over again. You have to learn from those mistakes. So when you go into the past, you're going there just to get the gift. What you're looking at now is being able to laugh at yourself. One of the most precious things that I learned was to laugh at myself. So begin to stop taking yourself so seriously. Begin to focus yourself and think outside the box. Why do you do the things that you do that you've always done? Ask yourself that question. And then ask yourself, why can't I do it different? Who says I can't do it different? And so when I make a mistake, I say, thank you, Lord, I'm learning a lesson. And there are times when I make it over and over again, I just can't see what I'm doing wrong. And I say, okay, just help me to understand. And then when I got it, I say, okay, I got it. I don't need to go through that experience anymore. See? And I would acknowledge the fact that, okay, I'm learning this. I just learned this. I don't need to go through that anymore. Okay? Now, look at what activities make you lose track of time. Time management is very important. We procrastinate. We put things off. We do things that we shouldn't be doing instead of what we should be doing. And these are the things that you want to start looking at and see where you can trim time of activities that you don't need to be doing. Watching so much television, if you watch television for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, what can you be doing with that time? Playing games. I'm addicted to games. I love games. And I have to force myself to say, I'm done. I'm not playing these games anymore. And then I go and I do something, and then I come back and play a game for a little bit, and then I stop, and then I go back and do something that's important. So if I have to play, okay, I'll play. But I'm also going to do other things that I have to do in order to accomplish what I want to accomplish. I can't spend 3 or 4 weeks playing the same game over and over and over and over again. My mother was a compulsive gambler, and she would play bingo in her old age. For years, she played poker and all those other games. And then in her old age, she started playing bingo. And she would sit in the church and play bingo all day. The only time she stopped was when they stopped. And there are bingo halls that have games all day. And if she had the money, she would sit there. And if she won, she would play that. And if she lost, she would borrow. See? So when you see that kind of pattern, you have to ask yourself, whoa, I need to stop doing this. What is it that I have to do? Make a list and go by that list. And, yeah, you want to reward yourself by playing a game? Okay, so I'm going to spend 10 minutes playing a game, and then I'm going to stop, and then I'm going to go do something else on my list. And then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to play again for another 10, 15 minutes. And then I'm going to stop it, and I'm going to do something else. So you're going to be playing, and you're going to be doing what you like, but you're also going to be doing what you have to do. Learn to manage your time. Learn to track it. Figure out what it is that you do on a daily basis from the minute you get up to the minute you go to sleep. Do that for a week, and then start trimming. Whatever it is that's occupying your time that could be used for something else that can be more productive, then start looking at that. Okay? Now, what makes you feel great about yourself? And there was a time when nothing made me feel great because I was a piece of crap and I was worthless. But as I started to see what my values were and my value of myself and my self-esteem, I mean, I can drive a car. In my day and age, when I was a teenager, women didn't drive. You saw very few women on the road driving. Men would drive the family around. But women, now women, every woman I know has a car. Very few women that I know or that I'm involved with don't drive. Because now we're liberated, you know that, right? So we all drive. But when I was 18, 19 years old, I had a driver's license. My father allowed me to have a driver's license, but I couldn't drive. He would never lend me his car. He would never buy me a car. And I was in school, so I couldn't afford it, and I couldn't afford it for years. Point is that I can do things today. I can go to the bathroom and wipe myself, as vulgar as that sounds. There are people who can't do that. I can read, and I can write, and I can count, and I can comb my hair, and I can take a bath, and I can tell when I'm dirty and when I'm not clean and when I am clean and when my hair. I can cut hair. I cut my daughter's hair this weekend, and she loved it. She just loved it. So make sure you start looking at yourself and see what are your traits? What are you good at? What are you great at? And who inspires you the most? Find someone that you look up to and you admire and follow. And let me tell you, this was very difficult for me because the people that I admired, I knew I was nowhere in their league. And no matter what they did, I couldn't do it because they were special. And I realized, no. They're just as special as I am. I'm just as special as they are. They're not better than me. I'm not better than them. I'm not better than anybody, but I'm not worse than anybody either. I'm right there, right along. Just like a little grain of sand makes a desert, and we're all a little grain of sand, and we're all working together. The ocean, you can take a glass and pour and put it in the ocean and scoop up some water, but it's still ocean water. You pour it back in and it becomes part of the ocean again. So consciously speaking, we're all consciousness. We're all united. We're all at one consciousness. So begin to look at somebody that you admire. Begin to read biographies of people, Einstein and, and anybody else that you can think of that you can say, wow, I really like that person. When I grow up, I want to be just like that person. Then start emulating people. Start looking at what they do and start emulating them. What do they do? And then start looking at what you naturally are good at. What skills do you have? What abilities do you have? Like I had the talking, and it was part of my list. What do people typically ask you for help in? You know what they used to ask me for help? This is messed up, but this is what they did. People would call me up to ask me how to lie. I was a great liar. I was a con artist. I would get myself into things. I could get myself out. I could charm the pants off of anybody. And people would ask me, my husband did this. What should I tell him? And I would tell them what they should tell. Then they'd get in trouble, of course, because I never gave them very good advice. But I had the ability to come up with stuff. And not research it, not anything that would be of any value, because I was making a lot of stuff up. And then I learned that I have the gift to do that. So now what I have to do is get the facts. Make sure that what I'm saying is a fact, not something that I'm making up. So now when people ask me what should I do, I don't tell them. I put a buffet of options, and only options of what they've told me about. And then let them make the decision of what it is that they want to do, because they're the ones that have to do it. And they know better than me what they should do. They just don't know that they know. So if you had to teach something, what would you teach? What would you regret not fully doing or having in your life? So if you didn't do something, see, your passion, your mission is something that you have to do. There's something that's going to drive you to do it, and it's going to help humanity. Now, these are the questions you're going to ask, and you're going to ask yourself these questions, and then you're going to write it down, don't judge it. Don't criticize it. Just write it down. Write a sentence down. I want to learn how to fly an airplane. You're going to do that in 60 seconds or less. Now you're going to go through the whole list. I had to like 8 pages, and I had to go through the whole list. And in 30 seconds or less, what am I willing to do to achieve learning how to fly a plane, for instance? What was I willing to do? And I thought and I thought and I thought, nah, it's more than 30 seconds, cross it out. If I'm not willing to put something down in 30 seconds, then I'm really not committed to do it. I would love to do it, but it's not something that's a passion that I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to doing. And then after you go through the whole list, copy everything that's left. So I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I wanted to make people laugh. So as soon as I saw that, I said, what do I have to do? And I started writing. I have to learn jokes. I have to learn anecdotes. I have to listen to the comedians. And I wrote a whole list of things that I had to do if I wanted to be a comedian. And I did it like in 10 seconds or less. And then when it came to talking, I wanted to be a public speaker. And then I started writing. And I would go to I don't even remember the name of it, some organization that teaches you how to be a speaker. And I would learn everything. I would get the facts. I would speak about things that were actually factual, not something that I made up. So I made a whole list under I wanted to talk. And then one of my other things was I wanted to leave something to humanity. I wanted to be useful to humanity. And immediately I started writing, and I started saying, I said something to the fact that I will learn as much as I can, and I will teach, and I will plant a seed, and I will do this, and I will do that, and I will... And everything else got eliminated. I had those three. That's all I had. And so I said, okay, well, if I want to get the facts, if I want, one of the things that I want to do is be factual, tell people the truth, not something that I made up. What do I have to do? And then I said, I have to read a lot. If I want to help humanity, what do I have to do? Well, I could write a book, I could do this, I could do that. But if I want to write a book on how to help people, I've been through all of these experiences, so I can help people that have also gone through these experiences and are where I was maybe 35 years ago. And so I said, well, if I want to do that and I want to get the facts straight, then I have to go back to school. And I went and I wrote it down, go back to school. That was my priority. I did this on a Friday. No, I did this on a Saturday. And that Saturday, I wrote down, I have to go to school, and I thought, but I don't want to go to the regular college because there's a bunch of kids there. I was in my 50s, and I'm going like, whoa, wait a minute. I don't want to sit forever in a class. And so I said, well, let's see what happens. If I have to go to class, I'll go to class, but I'd rather not. And I was working in an office at that time, and I was in Notre Public, I still am. And a friend of my son's came that day and said to me that he wanted me to notarize some papers because he was going back to college. And he said, it's the original school without walls. And that's where I go to, that's where I work now, Union Institute and University. And I could develop my own program, and I could get my bachelor's degree. And I said, okay, I can get my bachelor's degree. But immediately I said, oh, my God, this is it. Saturday I had asked for it, and Monday I was getting it. And I said to him, give me the name and blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, I'll do better than that. I have a packet in my car. I have an extra packet in my car. And he came in. He went out. He got it. He came back in. He gave me the packet. And immediately, I signed all his papers, and this is what's messed up about this. I mean, it's funny. He left. He was my son's friend. He left. I had done all help, did everything that I had to do for him. Supposedly, he was going to go to the school, and he was going to get his bachelor's. I never heard from him again. I never saw him again. He never went to Union. I immediately called them up. As soon as he left, I called them up, and I made an appointment, and I asked them, what do I need? And I had some college from before. I had 2 years of computer programming, and I had some stuff behind me from years and years and years, and I had some business courses and, you know, nothing that I could sink my teeth in, but a whole bunch of stuff that was kind of interesting. And so I asked them, what did I need? They said, transcripts from another college. You need this, 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 and this. You have to do an essay. You have to do this, blah, blah, blah. When I was in Miami already, and I went to college in Passaic, New Jersey, Passaic Community College. And when I made the appointment, I think I made it for maybe 2 or 3 days after the after I made the call to them, I made that appointment. When I went to them for that meeting, I had everything, including my transcripts. I paid extra for them to overnight them for me. And they did. And when I went there, I took everything. I wasn't playing. I wanted to go back to school. I was going to get my bachelor's. I hadn't even considered my master's. And as I went through the whole process, the people that started with me fell by the wayside. Even some people where I worked, they had started in the first classes that I had started, because in the beginning, in those days, you had to go to two or three classes, maybe two or three times throughout the semester. So it wasn't too bad. And so a lot of the people that started with me didn't graduate. They never made it. They just stopped going. I was the only one of the class that I was in that graduated from there. And then I was thinking, you know, they were talking about master's degrees and blah, blah, blah. And I said, like, well, I don't know about the master's degree. I went and I said, oh, I'm going to do it. And plus, I told you the story about my son, and he had cancer, and I told him, well, I'm not going to be able to do it. And he said, yeah, Ma, don't use me as an excuse to fail. So I finished my bachelor's. This was right before I even started. And so I finished that, and then it was time for the master's, and I thought about it. By then, my son had passed away, and I thought about it. And then it was as if I were seeing him in front of me because he had just passed away. And I said, I really can't do this. I'm not up to it. And it was as if he stood in front of me and said, Ma, don't use me as an excuse to fail. So I went and got my master's. And then, without hesitation, I said, well, you know, I've come this far. I might as well get my PhD. I mean, it turned out to be so simple, so easy for me. And I can't read. I'm dyslexic. I had to do everything on CDs and voice and all the books that I got. My sister, my older sister, was blind, and she used to get talking books from the Lighthouse for the Blind. And so I got in touch with them, and I asked them about it, and they had a lot of the books that I needed. I got talking books. You have to get creative. You have to understand that because you don't know how to do something now, it doesn't mean that you can't learn to do something. And I had to be creative. And because I'm such a good con artist, I was able to succeed in what otherwise I would have failed. So when it comes time to finding your mission, follow these steps. Listen to this broadcast over and over again so you get all those questions down. You can also email me at drnidia@drnidia.com. At drnidia.com. The same in before the at and the same after the at. Okay? I'm tired. I haven't slept for 3 days. But I want you to know that you can email me. You can go to my website, which is Doctor. That you can go in English. It's drnidia.com. If you want to see it in Spanish, it's drnidia.com. And I invite you to listen to this over and over again until you find your mission. You have a gift. You have a very, very precious gift. And you can find your mission. Make up your mind that you want to do it. Find a place at home. Go to the library. Go to a place where nobody will disturb you. Turn off your phone. Turn off your computer. Go paper and pencil. That's all you need. Ask yourself these questions, and then make that list. What would I really get excited about doing? What is my passion? Your passion is going to come from everything you write down. Don't judge it. Just do it. Just go ahead and write the list. You can have 20 pages for all you want, but just make sure that you follow through. In 60 seconds, first go around, 30 seconds, the second go around, 10 seconds, the third go around. And